Akshay, did you always knew what you wanted to do when you passed out from MBA?
I was all over the place. Saurabh, what about you?
Yaar, mere ko to tab bhi idea nahi tha, aaj bhi idea nahi hai.
Confused about your career choices? Wondering what steps to take next? In this podcast called Beyond Campus, Saurabh Garg, founder of C4E, and Akshay Dutt, founder of Unnati, are on a mission to crack open the career success code for the youth. वो बचपन में कहते थे ना, तुम जो चाहे बन सकते हो. So, let's turn the dream into reality.
Hi, my name is Parthip Tyagarajan and I am the co-founder and CEO of WeddingSutra.com, India's first wedding portal.
True love is a great adventure. And what binds two people is marriage with the presence of their loved ones. And the one who creates such weddings, trust me, is no less than Godfather himself. This time on Beyond Campus, we have with us Mr. Parthip Tyagarajan, CEO of India's first wedding portal, Wedding Sutra. He's had an amazing journey, right from starting up in an era when the word startup did not even exist, to discovering new ways of bringing people together post the lockdown period. He survived an extinction-level event from the wedding industry, and through it all, he's remained loyal to his core values of putting the pursuit of happiness above everything else. Here's Parthip, talking about how his professional career started while he was just in college.
Those were the times when there was no internet and there's no way you would get to know about summer jobs. And I probably made 50 phone calls to companies. And then finally, I landed up with my first summer job with a newspaper called The Independent, which was published by the Times of India Group, where my job was. And it was a paper back then, Akshay, which cost 4 rupees. So my job was going from office to get subscription of this paper. And what I really enjoyed is at 4 o'clock onwards, I would come back for my daily meetings with the manager in charge. And I would watch the journalists and see how they do layouts of newspapers, how they type. And again, try to become friends with some of them to understand how they get news stories. So that was my first summer job after 12th. And that's when I made friends with some journalists. And I knew that I wanted to do something relating to media. And I happened to meet a very talented youth journalist who had just got admission into IIM Ahmedabad. And she interviewed me for a story she was writing for the youth supplement of Sunday Observer, which was a popular newspaper. And that journalist was none other than Rashmi Bansal, the author of Stay Hungry, Stay Foolish. And she told me about how she writes for the youth supplement of Sunday Observer. And she gave me the address and the name of the editor in charge, saying that I should go and meet that journalist. And I still remember it was a chance encounter with Rashmi Bansal. I was introduced to her through a friend who was her junior at Sophia College at the office of The Independent. And she gave me this idea. And a couple of weeks later, I went to the Sunday Observer office. Every time I went, the editor I was trying to meet was not there. On the fifth or the sixth meeting, I got a chance to meet the editor. And you know how editors were at that time, right? He said, leave your address here and we'll get in touch with you. And I still remember that drive or hunger I had. I was like, ma'am, I'm very keen. Please give me a chance. And she gave me a small assignment on writing. Again, very interesting. I'm connecting it back to careers. See how life comes full circle. The first journalistic assignment I got as a youth journalist was to write about some colleges for a column of theirs called Fact File. So Fact File was really for a column which covered different colleges. So you had to go to a college, get the prospectus, write a 100-word kind of summary about how to get admission. Just imagine these were days pre-internet. So, you know, the only way you could get information in college is to go to get their prospectus. And therefore, this supplement in Sunday Observer was, you know, essentially about how to get the prospectus. This is the postal address. You have to send a money order of 20 rupees or 30 rupees. And this is how you will get the prospectus. So my job was really writing about different colleges, going to different colleges in the city, whether it was JJ School of Arts, Industrial Design Center. These are professional colleges and professional courses, and meeting the registrar and writing this call.
This was before you yourself joined a college. Like this was
while I was pursuing my graduation at Sydney It was in my first year at Sydenham. So I would spend time after college hours, go there. And when I was pursuing my, after my first year or itself, I took up a full-time summer trainee job at the editorial department of Sunday Observer. They also had a weekend supplement called Weekend Observer. And the editor of the Weekend Observer was a gentleman you may have heard of, Sudhindra Kulkarni, who played a very active role in politics, a well-known writer. He was the speech writer to the ex-Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee. And there were two of us from Sydenham College. And he gave us a very free hand that I still remember the first article I wrote for them was on World Secretaries Day, about how the role of a secretary is changing and, you know, the some of the secretaries to the top who's who people. It was a feature story. And I think I finished writing the story. I could not, it was I think a very last minute thing. And the editor could not even edit it. And I remember Sudhindra Kulkarni coming to me and saying, okay, just take out the bromide and send it. So the bromide was the page on which it was printed and sent for layout. And I was like, my gosh, what is he even saying? I mean, how can I even take out a bromide when the editor has not seen it? And I hope I've not written some rubbish. And someone had a quick look and said, hey, you've written a very good story, and immediately sent it for publishing. And next day when it came out, I called all the people who were featured. One was Rani Palkhiwala's secretary, the other one was the secretary to the chairman of Unilever, and the others, and told them, ma'am, please. I called them actually not even sure, you know, how, what they'll say about it. And each one of them said, this is one of the most amazing articles I have read. So that gave me a lot of confidence to interview people, write. Those were times when there was no emails. You know, a lot of people would say, send me a fax. We didn't even have access to fax. We had to just visit offices, wait. Sometimes people would welcome us. Sometimes people would not meet us. So that is how I started writing for, moved from youth publications to, you know, Kent features. And I spent my entire second year writing a lot. Besides, of course, taking part in extracurricular activities at Sydenham College. Because at the end of the second year, I realized I've messed up my education by spending too much time on extracurriculars and journalism, and I need to get back to studies, and which is why in my third year, I started concentrating on studies, but not that much that I could spend time in IMS, which, you know, was the Institute for Preparation for MBAs. There was that, it's called the Institute of Management Studies. So I could not clear CAT, but I cleared MDI, SPGEN, and I opted to do my MBA at MDI. That was really the start of my MBA.
Why not do something in journalism only?
It was, I felt that I could do my MBA and get back to business journalism. Being from a South Indian family, education was very important, right? So between doing journalism and MBA, I felt MBA would be a good qualification to have.
So how were those 2 years like at MDI?
It was quite a different experience from Bombay, because not many people were from the media background there. And, you know, there was a faculty, or Gurgaon was very different back then. You know, you didn't have easy access to corporates in Delhi. And we were the first batch of MDI. But I quite liked the experience of 2 years being in a residential program.
And at the end of MDI, did you get placed through campus?
Yes. And
what was your first job?
I got placed at the Times of India Group. So I was very clear that I wanted to join. When I was in my second year, I read a very nice cover story in Business World magazine titled Man of the Times, which was a profile of Samir Jain, who was and continues to be the vice chairman of the Times of India Group. It was really about how he structured the organization, how he brought in the concept of brand managers. So I thought, hey, you know what? I worked as a journalist. I've done my MBA, and why not opt to work in the management side? And fortunately for me, Times of India Group did come to campus, and that is where I was.
So that story inspired you to go to Times of India for a job?
Perhaps.
You joined Times of India. What was your role there, and how long did you spend there?
I joined as a management trainee. I worked in the office of the chief executive of Economic Times, Mr. Arun Arora, who is now a very successful education entrepreneur. I worked there from 96 to 98. 98 is when Times Entertainment was being set up, which was Times TV, Times music and Planet M. So I was part of the marketing communications team. I worked there for 2 years and I set up Wedding Sutra in 2000 along with my B-school friend Madhulika Ma.
So how did that journey of becoming an entrepreneur happen? Like, what was the impetus to quit a job and be an entrepreneur? And how did you actually launch it and, you know, go from zero to one?
So being in the media sector, that time the opportunities within the media sector were not too much. Times was one of the few big players. And of course, Z and Star were, of course, emerging at that time. And I don't know, I always wanted to learn about business, but I always thought that I can never become a business person because I don't have the money to set up my own business. Because my understanding was that to set up business or start something on your own will require a lot of money. And it was a phone call from Madhulika Mathur saying, let's catch up over coffee one day and I want to share some ideas with you, which is when she expressed her interest to set up her own digital venture. Those were the times when a lot of people were talking about dot-coms and I was reading about them. And she shared a couple of ideas with me. And the moment she spoke about a wedding portal, I knew the potential would be very good because I was in a media company. I knew for a lot of brands, wedding was a very important segment, whether it was De Beers for diamonds, DAC for photography, SOTC for travel. And I knew that with a wedding portal, there is immense potential for revenues through advertising.
So you quit your job and then started working on it? Or did you moonlight initially before quitting your job and doing it full time?
Just that was just about a couple of weeks while I was there. You know, it was just making some contacts, but it was not that I quit Times after it was officially launched. I had quit my job 2 weeks before the launch.
So how did you go from zero to one? I imagine you would have started with, maybe you had some savings, you and Madhulika, and you, because at that time there was no concept of venture funding. So I assume you would have put in your savings.
No, it was there, but you know, they were only for some, it required a lot of time. And we did know that because I was in Times, I knew a lot of people were looking at launching a wedding portal or a matrimonial portal. And we just said we want to be the first wedding portal. And we launched in 2 weeks. I think it has a lot to do with team effort. So me and Madhulika had and continue to have many complementary skills. And we put in our heart and soul, a lot of trust in each other. And yes, it's not that I spent my entire life savings. Not that life means what I had worked from 96 to 2000. So whatever savings I had, I invested on in Wedding Sutra. I still remember that my relatives were worried because, you know, that why I had left. And one of the good pieces of advice I got was, once you leave a job, it's not like today, right? But there are immense opportunities. Once you leave a job and you become a business person, it is very difficult for you to get a job again. And are you sure you want to do this? The other piece of advice I got from an uncle was that, you know, friends are friends, but when you start a business venture with a friend, your friend does not then remain a friend. Your friend becomes a business partner and then you go through the tension. So are you sure, you know, you have, you're sure you want to work with these friends? So these were all advice which one did get. But for some reason, I'm quite surprised. My parents were okay. I know that they did get worried after a couple of months. But when I told them I'm quitting, they were not. I told them actually I'm quitting after I quit. So I told them the next day after I quit my job. And I told them I'm starting something on my own. And I will be doing something in 15 days. And we launched in 15 days.
So did you like find a developer who built you a website? And
yes.
Then start putting content on it. Was it a content play largely?
Content. I had very good content relationships with a lot of senior journalists, feature writers. So while I was with Times, I knew a lot of ex-Times people. I got in touch with them. The brief was given. And we launched a full-fledged website, content only. There was obviously no e-commerce or with a lot of tools. And of course, Madhulika had been working on it for a couple of months. She had put the whole design in place and it was launched in 2 months.
And how did you sign up your first advertiser? How much traffic did you generate in the first few months?
I don't remember the numbers, but our first advertiser was Sunsilk. Again, I got an introduction to them through an ex-colleague in Times who was working with the digital agency of Unilever. He introduced us, and I still remember with the pride with which in the second meeting, I took a letter which was from Sunsilk, which was giving us a revenue of around 25,000 per month for banners. I still remember the joy I had when I touched that letter, the release order or whatever you call it.
So what was the progression like? Like you, besides content, you added on other stuff also there. So tell me about that progression of Wedding Sutra.
So it's been 20 years. And if I can tell you some highlights, of course, yes, content. We brought in a lot of content. We started doing a lot of work with brands who were targeting the wedding segment like Lakme and VIP Suitcases, among others. And we also organized a wedding show with a magazine called Marwar. And another advertiser of ours with whom we did a lot of online activations was Kodak. We also did India's first wedding webcast in the year early 2001. It was India's first live wedding webcast, which gave us a story in Hindustan Times. So we grew for about a year or two. We made our revenues through advertising. Brands were advertising on Wedding Sutra. And then thanks to the work we were doing with Evers, Marico, among others, they figured one of our strengths is understanding user experience for women on the web. And therefore, they approached us to develop websites for their brands. So we had another division of Wedding Sutra, which was developing websites for beauty, fashion and jewelry brands. It would probably take 20 to 30% of my time. And we continued doing that till the year 2010. Because all those years, there weren't many digital agencies. There was social media was just starting. By then, you know, our own advertising was kind of sorted, and we had to take a decision. Do we want to be a digital media company, or do we want to be a publisher? And we decided to be a publisher, and we stopped taking on digital media assignments for other brands. So all that we were doing was getting advertisers on board or doing activations on Wedding Sutra on our various platforms.
What other diversifications did you do, or other experiments?
So besides content, we started an influencer program also called Wedding Sutra Engage to enable brands to reach out to influencers. And then later we came up with our own IPs, which was Wedding Sutra Photography Awards, much later, which is more recently, of course, Photography Awards, Beauty Awards, Influencer Awards. So these are some of our IPs.
So these awards are essentially monetized through sponsorship revenue.
That's right.
In these 20 years, what has been like the growth, like maybe in terms of headcount or top line, or like, you know, some indicative numbers if you can share?
If I was to say that when we started, we were two of us, and right now we are a team of 30. So it's been a great journey. What is very interesting about this business is one can interact with so many people, right from women entrepreneurs, brand managers, high-flying destination wedding planners, entertainers, among others. So one gets to meet a lot of people and understand the role they play in making celebrations special, brides, grooms, and their families. 2000, it was the most cool career. I know some of the coolest people from media, fashion, banking, technology, was starting their dot-com ventures. This was in March 2000, is when the interest was peaking. Business World even repositioned itself to be a magazine of the new economy. All the cover stories of magazines were featuring founders of portals. We also made it to the cover of a youth magazine that was quite a high in our life. And whether it was being interviewed by, and then I, of course, another high was being interviewed by BBC for a story on Indian weddings. So there was a lot which happened. And every month there was something called Eat Tuesday, which was on the first to the last Tuesday of the month. Sula Vineyards would put together an evening, a networking evening, where founders of dot-coms would come together and exchange notes. VCs would be invited. And we really looked forward to those evenings.
You have seen, like, events, entertainment, media, and dot-com as sectors. So what is your advice to the youth in terms of career opportunities in these sectors?
Digital media, as we know, is growing. There is a lot of opportunities for doing work. But there's one thing I want to tell people. Always get into something only if you're very sure that you can, you're really good at that. Don't get into it because there's a perceived opportunity. For example, I know a lot of people who got into events thinking, hey, you know what, I love traveling and events will take me to places. And you know how things are today, right? You are, the only events which are happening are virtual events, yeah. And it may be like that for quite some time. But if you are really interested in meeting people and you enjoy putting together events, that could be that is the real reason, you know, why you should be in that industry. And then there's no stopping you, you'll do it. There are a lot of things which also happen in your life which are beyond control. And, you know, but it's, if you've been happy doing something as a freelancer, entrepreneur, or an employee, with a lot of confidence and knowledge, you can quickly change gear. Some of us are lucky that the right opportunity comes at the right time, or we are in the job which is just made for us, or we are in an industry where you can ride the wave. For some other people, it does not happen. But if you are going to be doing stuff which you really enjoy, then it does not matter. You will be a winner all the way.
The gig economy is something which is taking off in a big way, and a lot of people actually pursue the gig economy because they're doing something they enjoy, and this either is that source of enjoyment or it provides them with money to do what they really enjoy. So, you know, what's your advice to people about getting into the gig economy?
I'm a little old school here because I also wanted to do gigs, you know, when I was working in Times, because I got bored of my job, but I couldn't do it because, you know, how it was, you didn't have an email, you didn't have a mobile phone. All that is nice, but I still feel that if you're really going to do business, yes, as a stop-tack arrangement, you can be, if I can use the term, freelancer. But it's always nicer to be running a company where you have at least 10 or more people, or you are in a job with security. Again, I don't know about security. I'm getting so many messages from my friends saying, I just got sacked from this place. Maybe nobody owes you a career anymore. Yeah, it's, you could have worked for 10 years in a company and yet, you know, tomorrow you could face the axe. Let's face it, life has changed. So you need to find what, and there are different people. I know that there were some people who would not, I was like, you know, maybe, you know, I was of the thought that, you know, that if for whatever reason Wedding Sutra does not take off, I will take up any job which comes my way. You know, I was mentally prepared. I know a lot of people who have taken a break for 6 months to a year because they have not got the job they want. Yeah, I've never been a great believer in breaks. Yeah, which is why I was very clear that the day I leave Times, within 2 weeks, my portal will launch. Yeah, or. So those are the kinds of things. But so I'm not sure. But, you know, life is really going to change so much, Akshay, that we don't know how many jobs will be there. It's also worrying, right, Akshay? I mean, how many MBAs will now get jobs? And a lot of people will have to manage with living in that fluid world. And some of them who have the right mindset, attitude, talent, ambition, can work hard, will be successful entrepreneurs.
So a lot of people in the event industry, and you said a lot of your friends also have got laid off. What is your outlook on this industry?
See, again, I'm using the term again and again. The world has changed and lockdown changes our mindset. No matter what you say, people are worried about going to an event where they're going to be, you know, 500 plus people. And another thing which has happened is your corporates have all discovered the beauty of Zoom. So all these business travels, meetings, incentive, conferences, people are just saying, hey, what are we doing all this? We do all this only to give billings to an event company, or we were doing it because company X, our competitor, was also doing it. So people will find cost-effective alternatives, convenient alternatives. But with all this, and I'm again a believer on people interaction, those chance encounters, and I'm a great believer that human interaction is a luxury, which is why when you called me last time and said, I look forward to keeping in touch with you, I said, I look forward to meeting you soon. Yeah, because for me, good relationships, business relationships are all which, you know, they or business relationships improve thanks to face-to-face meetings. But that may not be the case going forward, that you will probably meet less frequently than earlier. I'm saying even after the vaccine is out. So my advice is, I really don't know whether there will be those opportunities in events like earlier, and a lot of event companies will get on to doing virtual events. But one thing which will remain is weddings. And I don't think virtual weddings are going to take off, because it's not like watching a wedding is not a webinar where information is shared, right? It's all about those emotions. So you're there or you're not there. Yeah, unless you're a very close relative, you can't attend the wedding, you would watch it on Zoom. But otherwise, if your friend is getting married or your colleague is getting married and you're not invited, you will see the edited photos later. You're not going to sit and watch that wedding on Zoom for 2 hours. Maybe you'll watch it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So weddings will continue. There will be opportunities for specialized wedding professionals. You know, will the days of the big fat wedding come back? It'll take a while. Vaccine being one of the things. It's also about how people's, mindsets have shifted. And they embrace simplicity. They embrace, they become practical. And you're not thinking too much about doing what others have done, but you do what you want to do and what your head and heart, hopefully.
How has being an entrepreneur polished your own networking skills? And do you feel that entrepreneurs must be super networkers?
Not at all. I don't. I enjoy networking, but I do know some very successful entrepreneurs who are much more comfortable with number crunching and analysis. But these successful entrepreneurs also have in their team people who can help get them the insights. When I say that, it's the way they engage with people through virtual networks, or how they work with qualitative agencies or PR companies to work at the insight level and not the information. So whatever you do, you have to sell something to somebody, whether it's B2B or B2C, and you have to work at the insight level and not the information level alone if you want to grow and succeed. So different people do it different ways. Some people read a lot, some people engage virtually, and some people like me go out and get inspired. Networking works for some people and networking may not work for some.
And how has entrepreneurship shaped your networking skills?
Oh, of course, great. It is about, you learn about, it's about what is it that you learn about business, making money by interacting with people. How do you connect people? Because when there's a lot of joy in connecting people, it's about keeping in touch with them. It's about sharing what we do, encouraging them. I'm a great believer of, that one should, it can be very, there are days when you can really feel down, because let's face it, when people at the other end are, when you're not if you're not like a Fortune 500 company and all, there is a lot of, when you're approaching Fortune 500 companies or the other big players, you have to be very patient. And therefore, you become very emotional about the fact that you have to support entrepreneurs, because there is so much which they do for which they may not be valued. And therefore, entrepreneurs have to support entrepreneurs. And I also tell people sometimes, who are unreasonable. Of course, clients are clients. You have to look at it philosophically. There will be some clients who will be your friends. There'll be some who value your work, and some will be bullies and who are aware that they are in a position of power and that they can bully you, because they can always have their way. And that is when you have to also learn by not taking things personally, and yet keeping a distance when required and being a friend someday, so that person does not do to you, does not do to others what he did to you. So I've had some such discussions I do a lot of work with tourism boards, hotel chains, brands. And I do remember talking to a very senior government official. This was about, 5 years before. And they were very unreasonable in their demands on paperwork and other stuff. And I just said, you know what? I've been doing this for 15 years and I've worked very hard. And I think I've given all that I could to complete this project. My only request to you, ma'am, is please don't do this to someone who is a much less experienced entrepreneur, because that person can just be left heartbroken, whereas I am in a position to actually engage effectively with you and tell you that what you are doing is wrong, whereas that person may not be able to tell you. And my only request is, I mean, you can continue to be unreasonable for as long as you want to, because I understand you, but please don't do this to somebody else. And I ended up becoming a good friend of that client in a couple of weeks. So yes, you have to be thick-skinned. But sometimes, of course, there are some very brilliant people who say, hey, why the hell should I go through all this? Yeah, I mean, so sometimes your weaknesses can be your strengths too. And sometimes your strengths can be your weaknesses. A lot of people will not have the patience. And then they may move on to doing excelling in their corporate lives. It's not that just because they left their entrepreneurship business, everything is lost, right? There could be people who have chucked up their entrepreneurship careers and blossomed in corporates. There could be some who just stuck on in a corporate thing and they have a deep regret that they never ventured into entrepreneurship. So that is where you have to listen to your head and heart and do what may be right. The grass may be greener on the other side, but it's not necessary that. And that is where maybe, yes, I love reading about happiness and I would love to read about whether you are going to, what makes entrepreneurs happy and what makes corporates happy, who is happier when. But on the whole, what I say, it's all about these. It's all about life stages, right? So if you have, there are different stages in your life and if you have done what you really wished for at a certain stage, whether it is about marriage, parenthood, corporate job, post-retirement entrepreneurship, if you really want something and you do it, and I've noticed that those are the people who are happier.
So, you said you love reading about happiness and I want to ask you this. Is the pursuit of happiness and the pursuit of success, either in corporate world or as an entrepreneur, are these two things compatible?
I think you cannot chase success at the cost of giving up on your personal happiness. So people who are happier at home will be happier at work also. Now, happier at home, how, and again, some people live with their parents, some people are married, some people have children, some people live alone. You really have to be happy at home. And then happiness will follow at work and there will be success all the way. But in your drive for success, you cannot put down your family or, forget about your dear friends. And then you will be left with no happiness, and when you're not happy, you will not be successful.
Is there a way to get both? So you're saying that you need to make trade-offs to some extent, and what is a way to get to chase both and get both?
Well, maybe you don't just have to chase it, you have to understand it. I'm not saying that people who are successful are very good people. Or people who are happy are very good to the world. Yeah, they could also be giving others a tough time, but they know how to balance their work lives and their personal lives, and they are very good. They are very good at identifying prioritization of work, prioritization. They know how to look for the cream and not sweat the small stuff at work. They know they really value the contribution of their parents or their companion or the role their children will play in their own mental happiness always, which will lead to their success. So these are people who are solid, people who are happy and successful are people who are very good at prioritizing what needs to be done.
Okay, so in a way, you're saying the secret to happiness and success is to learn to prioritize.
Yes, and which is why it is not just hard work. We see so many people who work so hard, right? We've seen in the pre-lockdown days, people who spent 5 hours commuting, yeah? And you sometimes feel bad for them, you know, that doing all this, 30 years, where are they today? Maybe they are happy people. You never know. But did they learn to focus and did they learn to prioritize? That is what you see in some people who are successful and happy.
So has COVID-19 screwed with your happiness? Because I'm sure your business would have got affected because weddings.
Not at all. I think lockdown, spending time with myself has been really a great experience with self-awareness. And I've just become stronger post-lockdown, more self-aware. And I think if someone was, for someone like me who would be outside home post-work hours at least 5 times a week, traveling at least 2x a month. I have not stepped out of my home except to go to the Kirana or the medical shop, and just one visit to the office in the last 3 months. And if you were to ask me today that another 6 months you have to be at home due to the conditions in Bombay, God forbid, I'm not going to be heartbroken or sad to hear that. Yes, there was one time when I was hearing a song shared by one of my schoolmates, and there were one or two things, you know, where they say, where you know, some very nostalgic songs or are shared, and you feel very sad. But after that sad moment, you come out strong. So yes, I think even in terms of business, fortunately for us, right now at least, it appears we will do well because we've really adapted ourselves. I have really coached my team members on how weddings and celebrations have changed, because as you know, weddings will continue to happen. It's just that the way the content is done will change. Brands will continue to target to be weds. And all my articles, I'm very happy that whatever I write, the article, not that I write too much, but all my posts, I'm very happy when a general manager of a hotel messages me to say, hey, great post, this is very useful, I shared it. So we have been the voice of the wedding industry and we will continue to be the voice of the industry.
Beyond Campus is a production of ThePodium.in, powered by Career Launcher. If you like this show, then we are sure that you will love our other shows on subjects like entrepreneurship, marketing, books and drama. Check out thepodium.in for a complete list of all our shows.